So here we go. Rod Barlow, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for coming on Blind Ambition Show. We're excited to have you. Chief Technology Officer. One of the things I love that you were a Ticketmaster. So I don't mean to jump ahead, but I got to find out more about what it was like over there, because I've bought a lot of tickets for concerts over my life, and I can't believe you're the guy behind it. This is awesome. So I'm super excited.
Looking forward to talking about that and much more. So thanks for having me on, Jack. Super excited to be here and to share more about my experience and to talk more today.
That's fantastic. Rick, do you want to start off? Do you have a couple of questions you want to just kind of open it up and find out more about Rod and all the cool stuff he's doing?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But to give our audience an introduction, Rod is the CTO at Sidecar Health. As CTO, he's responsible for product and technology at the health insurance technology startup. So Sidecar Health offers a new kind of healthcare insurance, which aims to be more personalized, affordable, and transparent by giving consumers the ability to pay directly for care. The startup has raised more than $175 million from investors, including Bond, Drive Capital, Menlo Ventures, and Tiger Global, at a whopping $1 billion valuation. And as Jack mentioned, before joining Sidecar Health, Rod was the CTO at Beauty Counter and Aspiration and the Senior Vice President of Engineering at Ticketmaster. So Rod, can you walk us through your career? How did you get started as an engineering director and finally a CTO?
Awesome intro, Rick, and thank you so much for the walkthrough and a great question to get us started off. So I feel really, really fortunate in my career, and I had some really, really great opportunities, including my first role here in LA at a company called Shopzilla. And Shopzilla to me was really like a jungle gym for my career. I wrote a ton of code, I worked on the architecture, and I pretty quickly moved into a leadership opportunity. And one of the really interesting challenges that I was faced with there was to go to London, hire a team, and deploy our new website platform there. And that to me was a really, really challenging opportunity, but I learned a ton. And so Shopzilla for me was like this jungle gym of learning, where I was in a highly technical role, writing a lot of code into architecture, and then started learning how to lead in a technical and consumer driven organization.
And Rod, just to for people who are not familiar, what is Shopzilla? What did they do?
Shopzilla was a comparison, or still is, a comparison shopping engine where you can come on, find search for a product you're looking for, and you can see all the merchants selling it, the different price point it's at, and so on and so forth. And they've diversified over time into many different other avenues. Really, really great company for me. Coming here in LA, not knowing anything, and to learn how to operate here in a US technology organization. And so from Shopzilla, I took a bet on myself. I went through this leap of faith where I was leaving behind the first company I've worked for here in LA, and I moved on to Ticketmaster. And I actually took a little bit of a gamble because I went to a role where it was a much smaller team. I took on a team of about 10 people. But this team of 10 was inside a massive technology organization, and a technology organization with a steeped history, you know, a 40-year-old technology company. And so here at Ticketmaster, I took a bet that I could come in and help transform and shape the culture. And this was a really big breakout opportunity for me. And what I learned here was that, in a bigger company, there are so many bright and capable people that might be hiding under a bushel. You know, part of the culture has squished or squashed them into this corner, but really these are talented, incredible people with tons of potential. And they're just looking for folks to recognize that, promote them, pull them out of the shadows, and help them do great work. And so that opportunity of starting in a team of 10, I was able to go out into all of these other product development teams and help shape the culture. And the leader that I went to work with there, I took a 50% bet on myself and a 50% bet on him. And I did well. Soon enough, he was faced with new challenges and needed some big help. So shortly, I was running a team of more than 150 people. with some big challenges, on for all of the customer touch points for Ticketmaster.com.
So that's a big leap from 10 to 150. I mean, we're not talking about like 10 to 15 to 10 to 20. So how did you make that pivot to kind of, did you get training, coaching, mentorship, or did you just have to learn on the fly how to watch over 150 people?
Great question. It's a bit of both. You know, suddenly being able to recognize talent and approaching people with a growth mindset and, recognizing that people are capable of incredible things. There was a woman I worked with there, and we'll actually talk about her, I'm sure, later on through the podcast. She was running, or she was lead engineer for a small team. And soon enough, she herself was running a team of 30 native app engineers. And she was someone that I was able to, lucky enough to work with, recognized her talents early on. And she, through her leadership, helped us scale as an organization. And so it's partly about recognizing that talent. And then, of course, as you can imagine, at a company of Ticketmaster's scale, there's many leadership development programs, helping people learn a structured approach to managing people, and so on and so forth.
So I'm curious. So we have a lot of ambitious folks within the blind community. I bet a lot of the engineers, they themselves feel that their talents aren't being recognized. From your perspective on the other side, are there any tips or any like pearls of wisdom that you can share that might help them get acknowledged or stand out?
Yeah, this is a great one. And really, I think at the end of the day, it boils down to the business. Everything we do as an engineer or a quality assurance engineer or a data scientist or a data engineer or a native app engineer, it can all be mapped, every single bit of it, whether you're working on CI/CD or some concurrent algorithm or some messaging queue or whatever, it can all be mapped back to customer value. So figuring out how you can shape the product and the customer or the member experience as an engineer, partnering closely with your product owner, having them recognize you. You know, they really are the voices of the business and the champions for what the team is accomplishing, And so these are all really, really great opportunities as an engineer to shine and to show what you're capable of from a customer, member, business perspective.
And would you give that same advice to someone that works at a Ticketmaster or even an Amazon or Meta, where there are thousands of engineers, tens of thousands of engineers? How do you stand out then?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, the engineering challenges they are faced with are very, very different. And their management structures at these huge companies are very, very different as well. I know a few folks working at some of the larger engineering organizations, and the challenges they are faced with are just sometimes at a different scale. And as a result, they're stacked full of engineers, and the challenge there is different. So you might be working on something that's very, very deep in the technical bowels of a problem, and translating that into customer or business value could be more difficult. But I think the same philosophy is still there, that you need to be able to show your worth as an engineer, how what you're doing contributes to the broader company mission, whether in some small way or in some bigger, more noticeable way.
So somehow you just have to find, if you're in a large organization and you're surrounded by very smart people, it seems like you have to find a way to show the value you have and how you stand above the rest. Or what do you think about this, Rick and Rod? Does it make sense then for certain people to say, maybe I should shy away from one of these enormous companies and maybe go to maybe a mid-sized or smaller startup where I could really get the attention paid? I could find a manager who could, like when Rod, when you just had 10 people, and I'm sure you had the time to manage 10, personalized for 10 people as opposed to 150. And Matt, do you think that might be for the right, for somebody, depending on how they are, to kind of say, hey, Rod, maybe I'll avoid the big Amazon because it just, I'll get lost, but I'll find another one where I can kind of just shine.
This is a really interesting one. So, for folks that are a small fish in a really, really big pond, or maybe they're a medium fish in a really, really big pond, it's still in that massive pond. It can be difficult for your impact to be seen broadly. Even at Ticketmaster, in my role, I was a medium fish in a pretty decently sized pond. And so I eventually arrived at the decision that for me to go out and feel as though my impact was greater, and to go and become a CTO at a startup fintech, that was the right move for me, and that I was going to be a big fish in a smaller pond. And through doing that, I was able to feel as though my impact was greater, that the buck sort of stopped with me, so to speak. And that to me was a really, really interesting challenge. So I could see that this approach could be similar for other folks, folks that have all of this depth of learning that they have from working at these really, really big companies can come and make a really, really outsized contribution at a small startup. And these are the types of folks actually we're looking for here at Sidecar Health, people that know the technology inside and out. That's kind of the table stakes here at Sidecar Health. And we're looking for folks that are passionate about fixing this old and decrepit healthcare industry and coming and making an outsized impact, putting a smile on people's face, putting the cherry on top when you're working with your health insurance. That's the type of folks that we're looking for to come and join us here at Sidecar Health.
Now, some folks struggle with whether they can make more of an impact as an individual contributor versus a manager, right? So with a manager role, it's kind of clear, right? You get an immediate, perhaps a title bump, maybe the job leveling structure is a bit more clear. And so I think some engineers naturally tend towards that kind of track. I mean, what advice do you have there in terms of how to navigate impact and kind of that personal professional development?
Yeah, what's really, really great today is that most of the modern technology forward companies have really, really good career frameworks. And what they're doing is they're setting out objectively what it takes to get to the next level. You can see where you're at and you understand what it takes to get to the next level. And so what's also great about this is that typically for most of these places have a track for individual contributors, for architecture and for management, whatever the track. But the point is that you can grow in your career along that engineering individual contributor track. And this is certainly true of all of the companies I've worked at since I've been here in LA. And so this means as an individual contributor, you can continue growing your impact. You can continue growing your comp along that individual contributor track. And so there's no need to jump over to management to continue advancing your career and advancing your situation for yourself and your family. And so this is really, really great because, by the way, management may not be for everyone. It is a really tough job. The expectations of a manager are completely different than the expectations of someone on the individual contributor track. And so one piece of advice that I would love to give here is to find a way to test it out. Internal mobility is a really, really great thing at an organization. And if you like the organization you're with, I would encourage you to find a way to test out a different track. Jump on that jungle gym, and if you've been hanging, try sitting or swinging, And so internal mobility is a really, really good thing. And that could fit for you if you like the company you're at. If you don't like the company you're at, or there's been a recent leadership change or an acquisition or a merger, that could be a really, really good opportunity to use that as a forcing function to go and leverage all that you've learned and navigate over to a different type of role at a different type of organization. So management is not for everyone. And find a way internally to test it out, jump into a leadership role some way, somehow.
That's really smart advice, because just to use a sports analogy, you see this all the time. You could have, an all-star baseball player, and then when their career is waning, they go and become a manager. And just because they're a great player, they'll presume, oh, now you could be a manager. And oftentimes it doesn't work because it's a completely different skill set. Or let's take aside tech. Let's say sales. You're a great salesperson, you know, great sales, great numbers, all that kind of stuff. Know how to schmooze. You have charisma. And then you go into sales management and you're horrible because you don't have the skills to manage a team of people. You don't have the, you're not interested in data. You can't, you're not analytical. So I like your idea to say, hey, maybe just try, like dip your toe in the water and see how it is before you make that plunge and realize, oh my God, I just made such a career mistake. What do I do now? So yeah. And maybe internally you do that. So it's, they know you know them. It doesn't work. Maybe you can come back to where you were doing.
100%, 100%, you know, find a way that it's easy to make a mistake and go back to what you were doing. That's a really good option. Not everyone is Steve Kerr. You know, when you mentioned the sports analogy, you know, find me a better person who's navigated from player to coach than Steve Kerr, you know? And so that's not for everyone. And so
it's hard. It's hard to make that pivot.
It's hard to make that pivot. So, you know, some of these skills that, you know, folks testing out the management track will need to draw on are, you know, it's kind of no longer about you. It's kind of no longer about you. And a lot of people have difficulty kind of making that transition. It's about you empowering, unlocking, coaching, challenging, guiding, mentoring your people. What some folks also don't recognize is that now you have two teams. You're not just getting one team, you have two teams. So imagine like a capital T. You have your people down the T, down the line, you know, vertically. They're your people. You are entrusted with these people, right? You are entrusted with them. You're not responsible for them. You are entrusted with them. And so that's your direct team. Imagine the horizontal on the top of the T. They are the folks like the product owner, the business stakeholder, the designer, the project manager, whomever might be across that horizontal on the T, that's your second team. And they have a whole bunch of expectations for you now as a manager. And so some folks who are moving into this role are learning that firsthand. And that's a big thing that folks need to be thinking through as a skill as they think about moving into, if they're thinking about moving into a management role.
Rick, how about you? What would you rather be, a bigger fish in a smaller pond, a manager, you know, just a player, but a player top of your game?
It's very difficult to say because I've definitely worked at larger organizations. I much prefer the smaller because I think it's easier to make an impact. There's almost less bureaucracy in the sense that I can take action quicker, I find. I can also have the opportunity to be a bit more hands-on with mentoring my team, giving them more opportunities because there simply are more opportunities, right? I find in larger organizations, things get so large where you get a lot of folks that are specialized, right? And they just only do one or two things, or this is their domain. And I find it hard then to even approach them or even mentor some of them, right? Because they might be completely out of my wheelhouse. I mean, Rod, how do you deal with that? Where you're at a larger company, folks are so specialized. How do you encourage folks to learn or take a chance there?
Yeah, this is really good. I reached out to someone in my network just this week, actually, and I noticed they'd made a career change somewhat recently. And I was checking in with them to see how they're doing, you know, partly because I'd love to work with this individual again, but honestly, because I cared and it's been a while since we chatted. And so this is someone that's moved to a larger organization from a smaller organization. And, you know, I got back, it's funny you mentioned red tape. That was one of the first things they replied back in their message to me. Oh, I was surprised at how much red tape there is here at company XYZ. And so, you know, it's difficult when you're in these larger places, you know, the red tape, the constraints, and all of these kinds of things. And so, you know, finding a way to learn new things in these organizations can be more challenging. And that can be one of the benefits in moving to a smaller startup is that you have the ability to focus on in different areas where you might be interested in learning. I've encountered engineers that want to dabble in DevOps, or quality engineers that want to dabble in product. And in a smaller startup where things are growing rapidly, there are more opportunities to be in the jungle gym and try out different things. And so in a larger organization, yeah, that can be tougher to do. You know, I don't know if I have a pure solve for that.
Are there certain skills that folks should add to their toolbox or their resume, so to speak, before, you know, thinking about even experimenting with the manager track?
Yeah, this is a really good one. So as a manager there, you know, and if I think back in my career, I wish I'd been more deliberate about my move from an individual contributor to a manager. And there are a couple of books that I really wish I had have read. And so there's this book by Carol Dweck, which is called Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. And I highly, highly recommend this book. It's an incredible read. And it talks about having a growth mindset. So I'll tell you a story about what not to do if you're a manager. I worked with this individual and they were responsible for technical operations. And I was busy building or had just ratified the career framework for engineers. And so I challenged this individual to create a career framework that would allow people from the technical operations center, the people that are up at 2 a.m. and, you know, watching the screens and making sure the system's functioning, creating a career framework so that they could grow into a DevOps role or a system admin role or a systems engineering role. And this individual said to me, those people could never do that. And I nearly threw up in my mouth.
Because that's a fixed mindset, right? Oh. So that's the polar opposite.
The polar opposite of you know, what a good manager, a good leader, of how they're thinking about the people that are entrusted to them. And so this is a really, really important thing if you're interested in management, is having a growth mindset, particularly where you see talent. And that may not be everyone on the team. And so another skill that I believe is important is being decisive. You know, if you have a poor performer, helping and supporting them, but also getting yourself to the point where you can, you know, make a tough decision if it comes to that. You know, this other one, this last one is very, very important. You know, in any team over time, cruft will build up. Cruft and the status quo will accumulate. And as a manager and a leader, it is super important to be able to recognize and challenge the status quo so that our teams and our people can you know, continue getting better. And if leaders aren't in place that are able to recognize and challenge that status quo, the cruft will just continue accumulating. So this, I think, is a really, really important skill for folks interested in becoming a manager.
Could that be a little dangerous for your career if you kind of push on the status quo? Because that means there's some middle manager or someone else who's defending, oh, we've always done it this way and it has to be this way. And I'm the guy saying, wait, no, let's do it differently.
You know, yeah, 100%.
It's delicate, right? It's a little...
It's so delicate. And by the way, my most hated five words, the problem with that is, oh, it just makes me cringe. And that is a really, really great way. The other one is, you know, we've always done it this way.
See, and that goes to the mindset. So I'm so down with that. Rick, have you read Carol Dweck? Do you know, have you?
No, I have not.
So it really boils down to this, and Rod, correct me if I'm kind of massacring it, but basically it boils down to this. You could look at a situation one of two ways. Either you could look and say, hey, I can make this happen. I can make it work. You know, I could figure it out. Or nope, I am where I am. That's what it is. I'm stuck. Oh, it is what it is. What are you going to do? And it's a completely different path. One is like everything is open-ended. Now, it doesn't mean you're just like naively optimistic. It's just that you train to think in terms of, I completely subscribe to this. Like, you train your mind to think, hey, I could do this. I could figure it out. If I fail, I'll get myself up again. And others are just like, meh, what are you going to do? You know, it's rigged against me. And now that I mentioned, right, don't you fuck, like when you talk to people, like you see they're very much in those two different camps.
100%. You know, one of the best leaders I've worked with had this little leather bound thing on his desk. And I never asked him where he got it made. I'm just assuming he found someone on Etsy or something like that. But it was this really cool little thing. And it just sat there and it said, it can be done. It can be done. And you know, it's so true. Whatever the thing is, it can be done. There is a way, you know? And so to reference another book that, you know, so the mindset book that we were talking about, this one's about people, you know, helping them realize that they can develop themselves to do more than they think they, you know, previously thought they might've been able to do. And there's this other book that I really, really like about situations like you're talking about, Jack. And this one is called Leaders Make the Future. And this one for me is such a fantastic book. It talks about the volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous world that we live in. And it talks about techniques to push through problem areas and, you know, break through challenges in a way that is kind of required of us these days. And so one of the techniques in there is called dilemma flipping. You know, and that's probably one of my favorites in there. So yeah, it's always interesting when you encounter these people in your career that are staunchly, we've always done it this way, or the problem with that is, you know, it's, I guess over time has become a very personal favorite of mine is working with those people to help them see the problem from a different angle, to think about it in a different way.
To go along with this thread, Rick, Rod, tease me on this, but because what do you think about mantras or affirmations? Do you do that? Do you feel that or?
Mantras or affirmations? Yeah, I'm a big high five individual. You know, I love, I love affirming people's work. And, you know, that's something I definitely take time out of my day to do. Is that where you were going with that one, Jack?
It's like, you know, where, you know, you, it's more, it's along with positive thinking, you know, that you're going to kind of, you know, let's say you're going for an interview. You're going to go into the interview saying, I'm going to get this interview. I'm going to get this job. I'm going to make this happen. You know, kind of just plant those seeds and have that thought. Cause like, then you replace that negative loop in your head that a lot of us get all the time with a more of a positive, hey, this is what I'm going to do. This is, and you just kind of self-talk yourself into trying to make it happen. Now, it doesn't mean it's always going to happen, but you try to do that.
100%. You know, I'm pretty much a glass half full individual, you know, most of the way there. And, you know, my wife who came out of an acting career, she's always framed it as the people at the audition, the people you're auditioning for, they want you to succeed. You know, it's the same in a job interview. The people in the job interview want you to succeed, you know? And so, yeah, I'm a big fan of glass half full and thinking about things in a positive way. You know, I go back to the little leather bound and it had this like gold print on it and it said it can be done. And I loved that little plaque that sat on this guy's desk. It was the coolest little thing.
One of the things that I find is people are their worst critic, right? You often tell yourself no before anyone else gets the opportunity to do so. It's the one thing that has struck with me. I learned this when I was working at Gusto, actually. One of my managers said, you know, you're probably going to tell yourself no. So there's no harm in asking yourself or asking others for something, right? Because you've already done the worst to yourself, right? So you can only go up from there. And in most cases, people will often surprise you, right? Like people want you to succeed. People want to work with you, right? That's why we're all working together. And so I imagine that is quite similar to your philosophy, Rod.
100%. And what's really interesting, and I've experienced this from time to time in my career, And the framing for it, I really liked. I can't take credit for it. The individual will know who they are. But sometimes you see people that in these organizations that are, you know, it can't be done, or the problem with that is. And the way to frame it is they've been sitting in the brine too long. They're pickled. They're pickled. You know what I mean? They're pickled. And those people, in order to reset, they need to go elsewhere. They need to go to a different company to kind of shake it off and do something different and to be able to start afresh and reinvent themselves. You know, and every time you start a new role or a new company is a really good opportunity to reinvent yourself, you know, and so that's another piece of advice.
That's great advice, because I see that all the time, because I've run a search firm for going on 25 years. And when you speak to candidates, you know, going back to when it was in person, you could feel it on them. Like you could feel it that they should have moved on a while back, because they're just so over it. They're just, their head is not in the game. They're kind of a little bitter. And how can you advance in your career where you are if you just emanate that? And like, you could feel, Rick, you don't talk to too, like you feel that vibe off of people sometimes, like, and it's like, wow, this part, you're not going to get the interview. You're not going to get the job. I don't even know how you could stay at your job now. You got to just do something different.
For sure. And so, yeah, you know, if you're out there and you're feeling pickled, you know,
I love that expression of brined and pickled. That's a polite way of saying it, basically.
I wish I could take credit for it. Yeah. But, you know, if you're out there feeling pickled, here are the steps that I've taken in my career, you know, when I feel pickled. My number one thing is finding your career confidant. Who are your 3 to 4 career confidants, right? And what I do is I call them up. I call one of them up and I start bashing, or I start beating up on the idea of, well, you know, I'm not liking where I'm at and I'm thinking about making a move. This opportunity came across my desk and I didn't say no to the recruiter. I said, yeah, I'm open to a conversation. And so, you know, let me tell you a bit about this business that I'm interested in. You know, what do you think about that? And so for me, these 3 or 4 career confidants, some of them go way back. You know, one of them is a chief operating officer at a gaming company, and he was an individual I worked with early on in my career. Two others are CTOs at local, you know, technology organizations. One of them has actually moved from a CTO role to one of these big, you know, kind of FANG type companies. And then the other is in business development. And he sometimes reads through my offer letters or whatever to give me advice and feedback on that. And so I would encourage folks that are feeling pickled to reach out to their career confidants and leverage these folks in your decision-making process and help you find a path to something you're going to love. You know, go back to being a raw cucumber instead of sitting in the brine.
How did you find those career confidants? How did you build this inner circle? Is it as simple as going to someone and saying, I trust you, would you want to do this for me?
Yeah, this is a good one. You know, two of them I worked for. One of them I started a user group with. The other one, we were peers and used to go out to lunch. And so, you know, if I call these people up, they're always up for taking a call, you know, and they're, you know, very much of the, they're very reliable people. They kind of do what they say they're going to do. And so if I call them up, I can count on them to hear me out and give me advice and all that kind of thing. And, you know, they know who they are, and I really appreciate these folks helping in my career. And you know, I would encourage you, if you're pickled or you're thinking about making a move, to find those career confidants and beat up the idea that you're thinking about.
Got it. I'm curious. You mentioned kind of testing the waters at Sidecar Health. Is this something that you encourage your engineers to do? Have you set up initiatives or programs internally that make it easy to do so?
Yeah, this is a really, really good one. So at Sidecar Health, we've just hired a new VP of engineering, and this is a fantastic leader coming out of a fintech background. One of our three very senior engineering leaders at the company, and we can talk about the other folks as well in a little bit. And so this individual has created structure within our engineering team so that we have multiple roles. So we have a structure for engineering managers. These are people who have direct reports. We also have a role which is defined and called out in each team. And we have a single person in this role in each team, and that's the tech lead role. And it's not a job title. It's a role that they play within the team. And folks who are at the senior engineer or above level are eligible to play this role. And so that's a way of testing out if you're a senior engineer or above, maybe I'm interested in management. You know, maybe I'm interested in taking on more responsibility and being more accountable to the product leaders and other leaders within the technology team. And so this is a way that people are able to test out, you know, what it would like to be in a what would be like to be in a management role.
As a tech lead or as an engineering manager, how much of your time is spent kind of doing the mentoring, that the people management versus the code or even some of the more tactical things?
Yeah, that's this is always a challenging one. You know, I think back to when I moved over to a management role, and I found myself on the weekends, you know, doing coding challenges by myself because I felt uncomfortable moving away from the code, you know? And so as an engineering manager at Sidecar Health, you're probably writing a little bit of code around the edges, maybe around 25%. But your responsibility is really the people that are entrusted to you, their growth and development, ensuring they're challenged and satisfied and looking after themselves and able to contribute effectively. As a tech lead, you're coding probably 25 to 50% of your time, and then mentoring through working on the code or mentoring through designing a part of the system. And so this is the primary difference between the two roles. Tech lead doesn't have direct reports, and it's a way of testing out, okay, is my future toward the management track, or do I really, really love continuing to be a super senior engineer on the individual contributor track?
Got it. I mean, are there situations where someone even goes at a high level on the individual contributor track, and can they then raise their hand and say, you know what, I think I've gotten to this point where perhaps I can switch over? Does that happen?
Totally, definitely happens. You know, it's the jungle gym. You know, you can jump from the jungle gym to the climbing center, you know, and so those opportunities are always available. I recently hired a chief architect over here at Sidecar Health, and I'm not sure the last time he managed people, but he's managing people on his team at the moment. So he's both a really senior leader, an architect, and a manager all in one. And he's doing a really, really great job of it. And he's one of those magnets for talent. You know, when we're talking about career and building a really, really smart and dedicated team here at Sidecar Health, he's one of those magnets for talent that I never think twice about putting him in an interview, because the second a candidate meets with this gentleman, they're just so likely to say yes.
Isn't that amazing how that is? I like how you say a magnet, because it's true. There's people have that, you know, energy that draws people in.
The energy that draws them in. And it's happening on a digital whiteboard, by the way. And it's not none of these like gotcha questions or anything like that. It's super collaborative. But he just has zero ego. He has zero ego. And the way in which he interacts with people is just a magnet for talent. And so he's been working with computers since punch cards, since punch cards were driving the computers. A Caltech graduate, our chief architect. I'm so proud to be working with this individual again. He comes out of a fintech background and just an incredible leader and architect and a magnet for talent. I can't take credit for this one either. It's the same guy with the little leather thing, but you know, he says game attracts game. And it's just like the magnet for talent, you know, game attracts game.
So it sounds like you're doing well there. Tell us a little bit more about Sidecar, what all the cool stuff you're doing.
Right.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're doing okay. We're doing well. You know, we made in December of last year, we hired 60 people in product and technology roles. And this year to end of June, we're going to hire 50. So we're going to hire 50 engineers this year. So we've got tons of openings on the team, everything from React, Swift, Kotlin, through Java, JVM on the back end. And we're open to exploring other types of languages if you're bringing that to the table. Python for our ETL and Snowflake in our data warehouse and Python for our data science efforts as well, which we just launched our first ML model actually to production, which is centered around fraud, waste, and abuse. And we're really, really excited about this capability. So what we are doing at Sidecar Health is we are building an incredible product, which creates transparency for the price of care, And we are enabling our members access to cheaper care through cash pay. So we give all of our members their Sidecar Health Visa benefit card, which allows them to go and pay for their care in cash. And what's great about this is you don't get a letter from your health insurance 6 months later telling you that your claim has not yet been processed and you could be liable for hundreds of dollars that you'd forgotten about because you don't have your cognitive load is, you know, taken up by all these other things. And you can't remember even what the thing was 6 months ago. So what's great about Sidecar Health, because with cash pay, is a week later, your claim is processed and all the funds are settled, you know? And so this is a really fantastic thing. And so as an engineer here at Sidecar Health, you'll be able to work on inspecting the data from the financial transaction or the electronic medical record transaction in real time and transforming that into a delightful member experience. Things like sending a push notification. Imagine you're walking out of the doctor and you get a push notification telling you, we know about your claim. We are processing your claim. That is what we're building here at Sidecar Health. And so I couldn't be more excited about it.
What about the transparency part? Because that seems really forward thinking as well. So that, to make it so that, you know, if Rick or I go into the hospital, oftentimes you have no clue what they're charging you. And you don't know what that bill is going to be like when you're done. So when you say transparency, is that kind of trying to clear that all up?
100%. So imagine being able to go onto a map in your zip code and see the price for care for a specific procedure at all of the different providers that offer that procedure in your zip. And then you as a member can make a choice which provider you want to go to. By the way, we don't have a network. We blew the concept of a network out of the water so that people can go and get care wherever they decide to go and get care. And so what's really interesting is we're creating a marketplace. It's basically a marketplace for healthcare where people are now empowered to make their own decisions. They can see on the map, okay, here's the benefit amount from Sidecar Health, and here's how much it's going to cost. So they can see, okay, well, if this provider is more expensive than the benefit amount, they know they're going to be out of pocket for the difference. What happens if the provider is cheaper than the benefit amount? We're actually putting those dollars back into the difference, right, between the benefit amount and the cost. We put the difference back into their pocket. Imagine my surprise when my 2-year-old's pediatrician appointment was cheaper than the benefit amount. And I now have $50 sitting in my Sidecar Health account, which I can withdraw whenever I choose. And that's just unheard of in the healthcare industry. So it's a really, really exciting and interesting and innovative idea that is just super exciting.
Yeah, it sounds revolutionary. I just want to make sure I understand it better because you hear such horror stories where someone goes into the hospital, they have cancer or something really horrific. And then, months later, as you pointed, months later, you get a bill for a staggering amount and they don't have that money. And you hear these stories where people have to declare bankruptcy because they can't even pay it. So what you're saying then, let's give an example. Like my wife had to have her gallbladder removed, right? If she didn't have to go like right away that day, we could take a quick look. I live in New Jersey. Let's look at all the hospitals around there, how much they charge, what it costs. So then we can make a reasonable decision to say, okay, this sounds fair, or wow, this hospital is ripping us off. So we can make a more informed decision where to go, what to do, and know that we're not being cheated and know what we're getting and not a surprise 6 months later. Is that kind of how it works?
100%. 100%. You know, this is such an old and decrepit industry.
Right? I'm shocked that I'm still floored. Like how this happens. Like no other industry. Like nowhere else you go and you get something, and then you get a bill 6 months later saying, "Oh, here's a crazy amount of money," and you're like, oh, "Okay."
No other industry operates this way. It's literally harebrained, and so yeah, you've summed it up really well. That is how we operate, and so. You might be asking yourself, well, what's up with this name, Sidecar Health? Well, the point is that we, Sidecar Health, are riding in the sidecar, and we're trying to put you, member, in the driver's seat, right? We're putting you in the driver's seat. And so what this means is that you are able to go and understand the market, and you are able to make the decisions about how much do you want to pay? How much is a care cost? How much do you want to pay? Going in eyes wide open to the benefit amount you're going to receive. And if you do wind up in a scenario where, it is more of an emergency, at least now the government is coming in to help with the No Surprises Act. So that's really, really good. And it's definitely helping the consumers out. What we also do at Sidecar Health is where we see things that are egregiously not in the favor of the member, we will, on a case-by-case basis, we will actually go and negotiate on our members' behalf. So
that's amazing.
That's something we're doing as well.
So how does it work? Because let's say I have Atlantic Health, that's my carrier. And I think I have Oxford Health too, I'm not sure. But sometimes you want to go to a certain doctor or a hospital or whatever, but they say, oh, sorry, we don't take that. How do you get around? Hey, you don't have that right insurance. We don't take it. Sorry.
Yeah, 100%. So what's great about cash is that pretty much everyone accepts cash.
Is that what happens? So if you're paying with that Visa and you're just paying cash, they're like, okay. Really?
We'll provide it. Providers love it because they through the shorter revenue cycle, they get better cash flow. They get paid instantly.
Right, because they got to get it back. They got to wait to get paid. And when you go to these doctors, like especially these managed care doctors, like I don't know if you had, you've seen them. It's like real big businesses. And yeah, you have a whole army of people fighting with the insurance companies to get paid and back and forth for weeks and months. So this way you take care of that whole thing. Hey, here's a wad of cash. Let's get it done.
That's right. We're on the debit rails, and Visa are helping us get the dollars directly to the providers instantly. And so that's what blew me away is thinking about this differently through cash price care and paying in cash. It's not only incentivizing and better for the consumer and the member because they can see the price of care. They can get a cheaper rate. We should talk about that. But they get a cheaper rate and they pay in cash immediately. So it's great for the member. It's also great for the provider. They are prepared to offer a discount. Imagine the sound of my jaw hitting the floor when I called the pediatrician. My wife said, oh, I'm so skeptical. Oh, should we try out Sidecar Health this year? And I said, we are absolutely drinking our own champagne. Yeah. We're absolutely doing it. She's like, I need you to call the pediatrician. I'm like, no worries. I call the pediatrician. I'm like, do you accept cash? They're like, yeah, of course we accept cash. And I'm like, well, okay, do you offer a discount for cash pay patients? Okay, so here's the sound of my floor hitting the floor. They offer a 30% discount for cash pay patients, 30%. So it is real. It's true of my pediatrician. You know, I haven't tested it too much further yet, but it is a real thing. And the providers love it because they get better cash flow. They're willing to offer a discount because they don't have to go and chase money with the old traditional insurance providers and negotiate and set rates and all this kind of thing. They get to set their own rate. And so that's what makes the product so great. It's good for members and consumers, and it's also good, as it turns out, for providers.
So not only are you a good tech guy and a manager, you're a good sales guy, because I'm sold. I'm in. Seriously, I'm going to look into it. I'm not just saying it to make you feel good, because things like that drive me up a wall. Give you a stupid example. My wife keeps saying I snore. My kids say I snore. So I guess I snore. And I finally gave in, and I went to, they said, okay, you could go to the dentist and they could give you something. And they made a mold. So supposedly that's going to help for me not snore. Okay. And then after I do it, right, I'm leaving, and then I'm in my car, and I'm like, why didn't I ask how much it's going to cost? And then I'm kind of starting to think in my head, how much are they charging? Because then I'm thinking, if they didn't tell me, that means it's expensive. You know what I mean? Because if it's not expensive, they would say, oh, Jack, it's only whatever. You'd say that if it's not. And so for the next week or two, I'm stewing, and I'm mad at myself for not asking how much it is. And then finally I called them up to say, because I was so irritated, like, why didn't you say how much it was? And in this case, it was like $600, which seems like a lot for that, but whatever. I was already thinking it was like $2,000 or something really big. And then I'm going to argue with the dentist now. Like, why did you tell me it was $2,000? I wouldn't have said that. So that's why I like what your company is about, because then you don't have that. You don't have, it's like, okay, I go in, here's what it is. I'll pay cash. Give me a discount. Everything's transparent. Everything's open. No worries about I'm going to get hit with a big cost. I love it. It makes so much sense.
It makes a ton of sense. You know,
so much sense.
There's probably $1 trillion of waste in this market between insurance companies and big providers setting the rates behind the scenes. You know, and so our goal is to eliminate the waste. You know, this is a $4 trillion market. A $4 trillion with a T as of 2020, projected to be in 2028, a $6 trillion market. And so the waste is just going to go up. You know, it's not going to be a trillion anymore. It's going to be a trillion and a half. And so we want to just take the waste out and put our members in the driver's seat.
Now, do they have other companies doing this, or are you kind of unique in this space?
We're kind of unique. We're unique in the space in terms of the product offerings we have, our accepted benefit product, our ACA product on the healthcare.gov product with ACA, and then our employer-based product as well. And we're delivering the same advantages through all of these different product lines. So the same advantage of transparency for price and empowering our members to pay in cash.
That's wild.
Fascinating.
Rick, you signing up too? I'm totally going to check it out. I have to. Because I'm telling you, it just doesn't seem fair. It doesn't seem fair that you have to worry, like, okay, am I going to have this huge bill and they don't tell me? Am I going to get ripped off? It just doesn't seem ethical. And you found a better way to manage it. So that's brilliant.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, we're hiring. You know, I probably have spots for each of you.
Yeah, I'm going to be a spokesman. I'll do it for free. I like it because I like the concept. I'll just be the spokesperson. So, just because it's so funny. I can just share this little anecdote. So my dad, he would be the guy, and he was a teacher, then an assistant principal and a principal, right, of a high school. But if we went to do things, he would always be the guy to say, okay, if I pay cash, how much? And as a little kid, I was always a little mortified. It's like, why? Like, I didn't know much. I was just a dumb kid, but it just felt weird that he's always haggling. But it would always work. it was like, yeah, it would always work and say, oh, sure, I'll take cash.
Absolutely. There's a great book on that that my wife put me onto, The Secrets of Power Negotiating.
Yeah.
And always negotiate. You know, I watched my wife go in to buy her Prius about a decade ago, and she got that thing for just a couple hundred dollars over invoice price. Just over invoice price. And just watching her go down the list of negotiating tactics was incredible. So always be negotiating.
Wow. What a masterclass. I'd love to end it. Is there anything else you'd like to share about the culture at Sidecar Health, or how someone, if they're interested, can sign up to join your culture? Because it seems like you're building something great there.
Yeah, absolutely. So the primary thing about our culture is this inquisitiveness and curiosity. These are the two big things in here. And a really great example of that is our drinking our own champagne, right? Many, many employees, over the majority of Sidecar Health employees are using Sidecar Health as their insurance, their primary insurance. And what we've discovered through here are some gaps in the product. And so being the team that builds the product, we're able to now go in and fill those gaps and figure out how to innovate and to put that cherry on top, like I was talking about. And one of these things that we've gone and built is a new screen around service limits. So I can now go in and see how many speech therapy appointments are available on my plan, how many physical therapy appointments are available on my plan. So from, you know, I'm originally from Australia and my R's are pretty soft. And so my six-year-old, you know, needs a little bit of speech therapy to help him learn how to, you know, do some American R's, you know? And so I can see visually in my dashboard that there are another 17 remaining speech therapy appointments to count toward my deductible. My son's deductible. And so like, this is a brand new capability we've built through using the product, being inquisitive about what we want as members and being curious about, okay, how can we make this experience better? And so we are really, really interviewing for this, for candidates that are coming in, that inquisitiveness and curiosity. We also have a culture of continual improvement. We have folks from so many different backgrounds, so many different businesses, and experiences, and we bring that to the table, but we do that in a way where we're trying to improve how our teams work, or how we deploy our software, or how we contribute our code, or how productive we are as an engineering group. And so that culture of continual improvement is something that we definitely look for in candidates as well. So it's a really, really strong engineering culture, and it's been set by these incredible three folks, our VP of Native App Development, Nolene Livingstone, our VP of the Core Platform, Jonathan Huang, and then our Chief Architect, Rod Morrison. And these three individuals are just incredible magnets for talent. They'll be, you know, interviewing tons of folks, as will I. And, you know, these folks are helping us set our culture of curiosity, inquisitiveness, and continual improvement.
Wow. What an amazing way to end. That's amazing. And so quite inspiring.
Awesome. Well, you know, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on today. This was an incredible opportunity to come and talk to you. I'm definitely a bit of a leadership junkie and nerd, and appreciate you letting me nerd out about that, and obviously a Sidecar Health nerd as well, and appreciate you letting me share more about our product and 50 folks we're trying to hire, and all of that kind of thing. So really appreciate you having me on.
Our pleasure. This is great. And you know, you gave such great actionable advice for the people who on the blind platform, but then when we kind of when we repost it on social media to a wider audience as well, and very actionable advice that's just, you know, sometimes you get advice just it's very just ephemeral, but here, like, you get very practical ideas what people can do with their careers.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review, and don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.